The Orthodox Union and Yavne Academy welcome you to Positive Jewish Parenting. Our first speaker tonight, Dr. David Yammer, is a licensed psychologist who commutes from Jerusalem to his private practice in Teaneck. Up until his family's recent aliyah, he was a school psychologist and director of student support services at the Abraham Joshua Heschel School for 21 years. He is also a consultant to Jewish day schools and has been an adjunct faculty member in the school psychology program at New York University over the past two decades. Dr. Yammer's two daughters graduated from Yavne, and his wife Susan, Mara Sara, also taught at Yavne for 14 years. It is with great pleasure that I introduce you to Dr. David Yammer.
So I know that in this building, I'm Mara Sara's husband, and that's really okay. Those of you at this early childhood, so she taught third grade for many years. So you heard of why I'm a psychologist. I have a private practice in Teaneck. I live part-time in Jerusalem, and I work with a wide range of kids. I work both in school settings and in a private practice. And I guess for me, it's also important to know something about you, even though the crowd is too big for us to have a personal conversation with each individual. But how many of you have children 3 years and younger, 3 years old and young? Okay. Between 3 and 4? 4 and 5? 5 and 6? A couple of you raised your hand for every single one of those categories. You're very brave people. Oh my goodness. You should get up here and tell me how to set limits. Okay, so we have a wide range of people, and one of the real issues with this in terms of setting limits, a lot will depend on who your child is, how old your child is, who you are, who your spouse is, how you and your spouse work together or don't in terms of setting up your family parenting style. And how often you actually sit and talk about that. So let's first start with some questions from you. What brought you here today? What made you work? Okay, because I don't want to work so hard. If you had any questions, anybody brave enough to say, is there a question that you would like to address tonight? No one wants it. Yeah. So the question is when you say no, when you let it slide. But the other part of this topic, which is often left out, is when you say yes. Because setting limits is not only about no. Setting limits is also, it's really another way of deciding, for parents to decide, what is it that's okay in our family? What is it that's not okay in our family? But also, what is it that's desirable in our family? So that, in part, when to say yes and when to say no will depend on, and we'll get to that, again, on a whole bunch of other factors. Like based on who your child is, who you are, what your goals are for your child, and you can say no to everything. But some people try. And that tends not to work out so well. So, setting limits, is it easy? No, if it wasn't easy, if it were easy, you wouldn't be sitting here, and I would be out of a job. Which is, I guess, okay, I could retire. But the truth is that setting limits is really very difficult to set limits correctly, or set limits well. Set limits in a way that helps you feel good about it and helps your child feel good about it, ultimately. And there's always someone in your family or in your community who makes it sound like, that's nothing, just tell the kid to go to bed. If your kid said, okay, Ima, every time you said, please brush your teeth, you wouldn't be sitting here. But the truth is, in most families, that doesn't happen. If you're really lucky, well, actually, if you're really unlucky on some level, your first child will be a very compliant girl. And that's really great. Then you think you're a wonderful parent, because you are. And then you have a boy, who maybe I am. And then you realize that it really wasn't so much about you in the first place. And I think one of the issues in trying to do this is also being able to be aware of, it's really amazing to have a baby. It's the closest you can get to becoming godlike. It's amazing. So sometimes some of us get carried away. And we think that we said it and it should happen. But even when God talks, we don't do all everything he says. So, I mean, I think it's one of the things that's also important to get some perspective on yourself and on yourself as a parent. Okay, so what's difficult about setting limits? Before we even get to how to and when you do it, what's hard for you about setting limits? Anybody?
Not Yeah. Every time I say no, my son throws himself on the floor, scoots himself across the room on his back until he hits his head on the wall, and then continues to bang his head on the wall.
Okay. So, one of the things, the most important part of the difficulty of setting limits is our kids hate it. Often. Again, if every time you said time for bed, your kids said, oh, thanks, Abba, I appreciate that, then there wouldn't be an issue. Setting limits is clearly what's hard for us. Our kids often have responses that show tremendous displeasure. Sometimes they fight us. Sometimes they show such tremendous displeasure that they hurt themselves. And that negative response by the kids leads parents to respond. So how do people respond when their kids respond negatively to a limit? Tell them to go to bed and he screams and throws something, or throws himself on the floor, or bangs his head against the wall. What do you feel? Well, is it really that important for him to go to bed? I mean, it's only 11. It's really not that important. It's only one night. It's only Tuesday. I could try again on Wednesday. I really want him to be happy. Is it really worth making him so... If it makes him so unhappy to not have ice cream for breakfast, then what? Really? Why shouldn't he? And then, in fact, so much of the way we see ourselves as parents, in many ways... One of the things you have to deal with is that sometimes the best thing for your child is to not be happy in this moment. That's very hard. Because we, in our culture, really see ourselves as not a very happy kid. I don't know about you. And a very wise friend of mine once said, your first kid, you want to be perfect. The rest of them, you don't want to be happy. So it also depends on what your expectations are. For your own children. It's hard to bear their obvious pain for many of us. And in addition, it's emotionally exhausting. I don't know about for you. But it's emotionally exhausting. Sometimes you just say, I can't do this. I just want to rest. I just want to be able to sit down and have dinner. And if it means that you're going to paint the floor with chocolate, I'll clean it afterwards. And obviously I'm giving radical examples, but even in smaller cases, I want you to sit down at the table and use a fork, and you want to eat mashed potatoes with your fingers. I fight with you about everything. So it's emotionally exhausting for us. And one of the important challenges in beginning to set limits is to be able to understand why it's important, even if your child is unhappy with your limit. Even if he screams, even if he yells, even if he bangs his head against the wall, which of course you don't want him to do, if you're sure that what you're asking of the child is really important, so why is it important? If it's so hard for us, and it causes them so much distress, and they say that you're the worst mommy in the world, or whatever they say that shows them that it's really upset, or they throw themselves on the floor, or they bang their feet, why do it? And the reason to do it is, it's pretty clear. First of all, in the short run, there's this really interesting research that's done by the North Carolina Department of Education, and they found that parents who set loving limits end up having kids in the first grade who are more attentive, better able to work independently, and more willing to follow directions, and better able to follow directions. So, from a touchless standpoint, you have a young child who's hopefully going to go to first grade at some point. It has some very touchless results. But beyond that, in order for you to ultimately be a happy, healthy human being, you need to learn to self-regulate. You need to be able to modulate your emotions. You need to be, you need to delay gratification. Not just your parents' gratification, your own. You need to be able to tolerate strong emotions without exploding, without shutting down. You need to take no for an answer. And mostly, if you really want to have a relationship ever in your life, you need to learn to say no to yourself. Because if you don't know how to say no to yourself, then how could you really ever take someone else's needs into account? You can't. You have to learn how to say no to yourself and say, in this case, I may be disappointed, but I'm okay because the person I feel connected to is getting something out of this. And the way children learn this, the way children learn self-regulation, the way children learn how to express their own emotions, the way children learn how to delay gratification, the way children learn how to take into account other people is through limits that are set lovingly by parents. By the way, I would prefer if you have a question or a statement or a comment that you don't throw anything, but if you call out or raise your hand, I would rather you interrupt in the middle rather than wait till the end. And the list goes on. I mean, to become a healthy adult, you need to learn and really feel truly that living without getting what you want exactly when you want it is not a devastating betrayal of your basic rights as a human being. And I'll say that again, because I've worked with kids who get to middle school and high school whose parents have tried with tremendous love and with tremendous mesirat nefesh to fill every need a child has. And unfortunately, those children don't end up being giving, kind, people who contribute a lot. They end up being selfish. Because what they learn, the unintended consequence is of trying to fill every need, is that children don't learn how to deal with frustration. Because frustration is a betrayal. Oh, that's not the way you raised me. You raised me to expect that I'm going to get everything. And they become somewhat self-centered. You can work with it. Yeah.
What do you say the worst? Saying yes to everything? Or saying no and then after the truth here and the pain in your head or crying with it and saying yes after?
Would I rather break my arm or my leg? The truth is, I think that saying yes to everything, while indulgent, it's an approach. We may talk about whether it's a healthy approach. Saying yes, saying no, and then saying yes afterwards, based on the child's negotiating strategies or intense distress, ends up making it much more difficult to change. And it's clear that research on behaviorism for many, many years, ever since BF Skinner, unpredictable reinforcement schedule leads to behaviors which are the most difficult to change. Look at addictions. Look at gambling. People who are addicted to gambling are people who have an unpredictable reinforcement schedule. Occasionally they get just what they want. And very often they don't. And it's very hard, even though rationally, they really know that the odds of them winning are not very great. But the chance is there. So what ends up happening is, in my experience, those kids, whether it's worse or better, depends on whether you as a parent prefer a child who is dissatisfied if he doesn't get what he wants, or a child who negotiates endlessly. Because the first scenario in trying to give a kid whatever he wants, saying yes all the time, doesn't help them learn to live within limits. What happens when they get to school and they don't feel like doing homework? Well, you said yes all the time, now you're stuck between school's expectations and your expectations, and that's very hard unless you're willing to homeschool them, and I wouldn't recommend that. I mean, people do it, it's great, but I think it's more difficult. So, but kids who learn that no doesn't mean no. No is just your opening gambit. And no eventually means yes, and they will wear it down, end up not giving in. So that when we talk about setting limits as we are, no has to be no. It's better to say yes than to say no. No, because what happens? Tell a kid, for example, he can't watch TV. He has a tantrum. He's just flipping out, doing whatever he's doing. And then to soothe him, you say, come on, Tati, please, calm down, you can watch TV. And you feel like you're doing a great thing because you calmed him down. But in the end, what you calmed him down by letting him have what you told him he couldn't have in the first place. And most of us are not aware. Some of you are smiling. Maybe you recognize that.
But
you know what? I have some friends in the audience who can talk about my parenting. I just realized. The truth is always easier. It's always easier to deal with someone else's child. Because remember the first time I took our son home and he was from the hospital and he was crying, my wife looked at me and said, you're a psychologist, you deal with it.
So if you say
Okay, so we're jumping the gun a little bit, but you need to know why you're saying no. You need to know why you're saying no, just saying no for the sake of saying. If you're saying no because you're in a bad mood, then you can say, listen, I'm in a bad mood. I don't want to drive. I don't want to fight the traffic on Route 4. I know I told you, but I can't do this now. You can take it back. There are ways, but it's if you're going, if it's a pattern, it depends on whether you're talking about a pattern of repeatedly saying no and then saying yes, or no means no. And once every few months, you know, you say no. Once every month, you say no, and the kid says something, and he's right. He's right. You know, I told you you couldn't have ice cream because you had ice cream before, and you told me, you know, I didn't have ice cream before because you forgot to give it to me. So I made a mistake. So why say no? That, but the biggest issue is, why is it you're saying no in the first place? And is this something that a child can do? This is not, we don't have time to go through all of child development and temperament, but if you like to read, I suggest you read a book called First Feelings by Stanley Greenspan, talking about really a very deep understanding of children's emotional life and the things they have to learn in order to be in relationships. Because being in relationships and being able to be disappointed for something they want right now, yet feel okay, comes from the strength of their relationship with you and your willingness, when you say no, even if they're upset, may help them be in a safe place and follow through on that. It's very important, right? So if you like to read, that's a really good introduction. And he has a series of books. First Feelings is about early childhood, and Playground Politics is about elementary school. It's really worth that. And in the end, I'll also, if we have a little time, I'll give you a worksheet on temperament. Because one of the things that often happens is that if you want to set a limit, you need to set a limit, and you need to be able to set your expectations. Setting limits is really the process of setting expectations for your family. And you need to set expectations based on the child, really, who the child really is. If you have a child who gets overwhelmed very easily or overstimulated very easily, you can make the best bargain in the world. You can have the best contract you ever thought of in your whole world. Take him to Toys R Us, he's going to fall apart. And there's nothing you're going to do. Rarely, it's rarely possible to take a kid who's that easily overstimulated into Toys R Us without being a problem. So part of setting limits is, am I asking the child to do something that he really can do? You take your 4-year-old to shul and say, sit next to Abba until after Shemona Esrei. Well, some kids can do that, but most 4-year-olds can't do that. And then parents tend to see that as the child being unmotivated to do the right thing. Why is he fighting me on this? When in reality, you're asking a child to do something he can't really do. So part of your setting limits is being able to understand who your child is and what they can do and they can't do. Just an interesting note talking about the importance of being able to self-regulate and say no to yourself. People who do research on happiness find there's three aspects to happiness in adult life. One is pleasure, physical and emotional pleasure. The second aspect is connectedness, feeling like you belong to a family, a group, a community. And the third is meaning, finding meaning in life. Meaning. And young children really function on the pleasure principle. That's who they are. That's okay. We don't then have to say, because you function on the pleasure principle, everything you find pleasurable you're going to get right now. But it's also important for us to begin to teach them the importance of connectedness, things we do for family, and meaning, things we believe in, but understanding that they don't quite get it yet, just yet. That's not what's really driving them. Okay. So our goal is to get kids to be able to come to a place where they can say, Abba said no, but I'm okay. Because ultimately that leads people to be able to say, I didn't get what I want, and I'm disappointed, but I'm really going to be okay. Okay, so first thing in terms of parents is, you don't have to answer this question. How many of you have regular meetings, if you have a parenting partner of some kind,
How many of you have regular meetings to discuss, like, what do we do right now? What's our goal? Okay, two, three. Why is it that we talk to each other about all sorts of things? A mortgage, vacation, all sorts of decisions. But the most difficult thing a person has to do, I think, is raising children. Raising children is one big science experiment. That's all it is. Sorry? You have hypotheses about what you think you want to accomplish and how you're going to get there. You do your treatment, whatever your intervention is. You might be saying no, might be saying yes, it might be finger-painting under a picture. You gather data, did it work to get me what I wanted, and you readjust. Anybody who tells you they know exactly what you have to do to make it work, let's turn this out to something. It's all exploration. It's taking data. If you're lucky enough to have a partner, why not share this? Because it's not really, I don't see how it's really possible to do as well by having only one person in charge of parenting in the household, if there are two people who are the parents. So the first thing is, I think it's important for, if there are two parents, for those parents to see themselves as, with divisions of roles, obviously, to see themselves as partners in this enterprise. I mean, it's not that we're partners. Mom tells me what to do and I do it. Fathering. When fathers stay with kids, they're not babysitting. They're fathering. They're parenting. Okay? Fathers, when you stay with your children, you're not doing their mother a favor. They are your shared children. So the first thing that's important to think about is attitude. Ron Tappel, who's a family therapist in New York, talks about every parent needs to have, and every family needs to have, their own mixture of empathy and expectations. I guess in our terms, in Orthodox school, that would be midat hadin and midat harachamim. You need to have empathy and expectations. Parents who only have empathy don't actually ever get their kids to do anything. This is sort of something a colleague of mine once called the understanding fallacy, which is, I understand why my child is angry, and I let him do what he wants, because I know he had a reason to be angry. But being a parent means I understand why you're angry, and I can see why you were angry, but now I have education. And educating you means responding and helping you see what's okay in our family and what's not okay in our family. So one of the things that I think is important to know is that you have to decide for yourself what's the balance between empathy and expectations, and it's not helpful to have an empathic father and an expecting mother, or vice versa. To have one parent who's there to be the good cop, bad cop, doesn't work in parents. You have to be on the same page. So one of the things to really be able to do is to look at your own relationship as parents, and before even thinking about how to set a limit, is, do we agree on this limit? Can we discuss what this is? Just about the no and the yes? If you said no to watching TV and your wife said, come on, let him do it, then, I don't want to get personal here, but then the child knows that there's no way that the limits are going to stay set. If you only have midat harachamim, then you yield to everything. If you only have midat hadin, then you have a very harsh family environment, and you're a parenting, you're not a parent, you're an enforcer. And finding a way to do both is really very important. And seeing parents as loving guides, caring guides to our children, is really an important issue. So let's talk about consistency for a moment. How many of you are consistent all the time? If you raise your hand, you lie. It's not possible. Let's not have that as a goal, but every single time I say something, I'm going to be 100% consistent. It's not possible. But if your goal is to say, we're not watching TV during the school week, for example, or with young kids, you can't have junk food in the morning, or maybe not even during the week, then try to be consistent. If you have consistency as a goal, you'll do it much more often than if you don't have it as a goal. But nobody that I know
is consistent all the time. So how do you set a limit? The first thing is you need to know what you want to accomplish. Second, you need to teach them the routines of your day. The important things in your children's life come back over and over and over again. So if your child had a tantrum, if it only happened once in one way, you would, you'd say, oh, it's interesting, but it wouldn't bother you. But then you have to find a way to plan together for what do we do next time. And trying to set up routines to prevent the need to set limits is really important. Keep your rules short and simple. We don't run in the house. We run outside. One of the goals of young children is learn to use words. Help them use words. But saying use your words is not enough. What words? These are not words. I said you're stupid. So using words is not, saying use words is important, but saying use words is not enough. What words? On Facebook, though, there are four. Did you ever get angry? Any of you ever get angry? Okay, fine. So when you get angry, you don't finish it. I don't finish it. One of the things we want to teach our children is that their feeling is not the same thing as their behavior. Limits only can be applied to behaviors, not to feelings. What are you so angry for? That's not a limit. That's an intrusive statement. Tell me what you're angry to you. Caring. Exploration of a child's feelings. But limiting how a child, trying to limit how a child feels or what they think is going too far. Limits apply only to behaviors. And one of the things that children need to learn, especially around age 3, 4, or 5, is the difference between their feeling and the way they express it. That they can have intense emotions. They need to learn that intense emotions come and intense emotions go and they come back again. But the way you're feeling right now, it's not going to feel that way forever. And right now it feels really terrible. And they need to see that their parents are not thrown off their own equilibrium by their behavior, as difficult as the behavior is. After your child does something that's really upsetting to you, you go into another room and you cry, that's okay. But with your child needs to see that their rage didn't throw you off your own equilibrium. You're strong enough to deal with their storm. And being able to show that is really very important. Anybody have any comments, questions, thoughts, complaints? Okay. Can you decide on a routine for your setting limits? Or decide on a routine for your child? It's really important to understand that deciding on the routine is not the same thing as teaching it. Telling the routine is not the same thing as teaching it. And that you have to break it down into very small steps and have your children learn it step by step. And understanding, just like in school, if your teacher tries to teach your child something and they're not getting it, you want the teacher to do it differently. But in fact, we need to change what we're doing if it's not working. Okay. Yeah. Okay. When your child has a temper tantrum. Well, the most important thing to do when your child has a temper tantrum is to make sure that they're safe and not going to harm themselves. That's the first thing. And if they're safe and they don't harm themselves, the next most important thing is for you to stay calm if you can. Now, obviously, if they're having a temper tantrum on the bima on Rosh Hashanah, you're not going to stay calm. You're going to pick them up and leave. But if they're in a safe place, you help them. You know that they're safe. And you need to learn about your child. For some children, any word you say is like fuel on a fire. And that the best thing for you to do is just be present. And every once in a while, say, it'll be okay. Or, I know you want to watch TV, but you can't. But even being quiet and waiting, having them go through that. If they're in a place where they're not safe, you have to take them to a place where they're safe. Now, with young children, you can still pick them up, but it's really best if they find ways to... Our goal is to help kids learn how to soothe themselves. Not to always need us to help them soothe themselves. Now,
Is temper tantrums a broadly held issue? Yeah, okay. It also depends on whether you can figure out what it is that brings on a temper tantrum. And there are ways of avoiding temper tantrums by preventing them if you know what brings them on. If you know there's a families get into scripts. Time for bed. One, 5 more minutes. Brush your teeth. Not today. I did it yesterday. You get into a script. When you recognize your script, it's very hard to recognize your scripts. But when you, if you take a step back and learn what your script is, then you can change it. If your script is that my child and I have a nightly negotiation around bedtime, which ends up in me finally losing my temper and then getting him to go to bed by screaming and yelling, then let's just start, don't start by screaming and yelling, but then you need to know that you're negotiating with your child. In fact, you're negotiating with your child is only making it worse. Mostly when our kids are not living within our limits, most of us try to say the right words which get them to magically change in front of us, and it doesn't really work. Yeah. No, they can see, you can see that it can affect you and that it can't destroy you in some way. What they're doing is what? Sometimes. And sometimes it's... It depends what you mean by affecting you. If you say calmly, this makes me very angry and I can't talk to you now, and you show that you can be angry and stay in control, that having it affect you is perfectly reasonable. If you start screaming and yelling, rage is a really, really ineffective parenting tool. If people lose their tempers because, you know, they do it for, we do it, I'm saying people, I'm doing it myself too. You lose your temper for yourself. You have a need you're fulfilling by doing that. But don't pretend that your rage is going to help your child learn better. Rage is not an effective educational tool, it's not an effective parenting tool. However, if your child is really being provocative and you're able to say, no, it's enough, and show them it really bothers you by staying in control and letting them see that you're not, it's not ruining your life, you're also letting them see that their rage is not so strong. And the disappointment that they feel, it's okay, I can take it, it'll get better. This is one of those strong emotions that's here now that will get better again later. Yeah.
What's the best, or what do you recommend as a reaction for when your child hits you?
How old a child?
4.
Okay. And for what?
I know what you want.
Okay. First of all, I recommend you don't hit her back. Because some people say, I'll run into you and know what it feels like, I'll hit you back, and that doesn't necessarily give the right message. Or parents just say, don't hit when you're angry. So that's obviously not a... sorry? Okay, I want to go to the other time now. The other place with setting limits is you need to have consequences. And consequences have to be more than a mommy's angry. Consequences need to be behavioral. And they have to grow out of the situation. I think with a child that young, you might just take her and sit her down somewhere, showing her that you're upset. Don't throw her down, obviously, but sit her down and say, you can't hit mommy, sit there. And that's, but for a child that age, if you get her to sit for 15 seconds, that's great. Don't ask her to sit there for 10 minutes. If she can sit for 15 seconds, then ask her to do 20 seconds. But you have to build up what you're expecting, the kinds of patience and self-regulation and modulation. And then you go back to her and you say, once you're calm, a little calmer, and she's waited a bit before she's gotten up and run away, and you say, mommy, we don't hit when we're angry. It's important to state a rule simply, in as few words as possible, in a way that you can even say, we don't hit. Of course, it has to be that way in your family. But if that's the case, then you say, we don't hit. You are angry. And then you need to help her. What can't you do when she's angry? Were you angry at mommy? Ima, whatever she calls you. Okay, so let's, next time when you're angry at mommy, you can say, I'm angry at mommy. Or whatever it is would be acceptable in your life. It's not enough to tell kids what not to do. Setting limits is not only about telling them what not to do, it's helping them with a replacement behavior that you will accept and that you will want of them so that they can, and if you want them to use words, you have to let them know what words would be okay. And sometimes, bright, verbal four-year-olds will tell you, no, I want to say this, and you say, fine, it's okay. Yes? Your 8-month-old is crawling and he's about to put his hand in the socket. What do? You say no, sharply. And kids need to learn very early that certain things are okay and certain things are not okay. It's much more easy for us to be assertive about that when it comes to safety. But your child wants a cookie for breakfast. They're a year old. To me, the answer is no. Unless in your family, people eat cookies for breakfast. Because then, you know, if in families where, you know, the adults are having coffee with sugar and donuts for breakfast, and the kids have to eat healthy food, that's a message, that's a tough one. But if in fact the answer is no, the answer is no. I agree with you. Early on, no and yes really has to matter, and it needs to be done in a loving way. They need to understand that the same mommy who says no is the same mommy who says yes. And the same, just like the mommy who said yes loves me, the mommy who says no loves me. Young children have a hard time with that. There are some adults who have a hard time with that. But if you want your child to grow up to be a person who can understand that you have to, you can only love imperfect people. Because there aren't any others that exist. Only imperfect people exist. So if you want your child to grow up to be someone who has the ability to love a person who is their mommy and loves them even though they say no, then it's important to say no at the right times. Not to say no just for the sake of it, but I agree with you. If your 2-year-old hits you, you don't say, wait till you're 4, I'll put you in the corner. you do something really, you might just put them down and say, no, we don't hit. And then 3 seconds later you pick them up, so they know that you haven't, this didn't break the relationship. There's still a loving connection. Young kids can do this. You see 8-month-olds who look at their mother across the room, or their father across the room, or in my stage of life, their grandfather across the room. By the way, those of you who have children, when it's time to get to be a grandparent, it's really worth it. You know, whatever you're going through now, it's worth it. But they look them across the room and they notice the connection and they smile. Young children are capable of being in relationship, even if they're not being held closely across from as they get older and older. And then also the next thing they need to learn is that they're in a relationship even when someone is angry or disappointed. Those aren't relationship breakers. We want them to have this dimmer switch on their sense of themselves as opposed to an on-off switch. So it is important to say no to very young children. How you say it and how long. And don't send a 2-year-old to his room. What does that mean? Sending a 2-year-old to his room is saying, get out of my life. It gives me a timeout. There are people who believe that timeout has to hurt, or that consequences have to hurt. I don't believe that. So you can, you know, read somebody else's book. I don't have a book, but you can. But timeout is an opportunity for a child to get reorganized, to calm down, and to rejoin the family after having done something that is not acceptable in the context of your family. So, consequences are designed to educate. If you're with older kids, it's easier to come up with examples. You put the TV on. When you're not supposed to, we'll just put the TV in the closet because I can't go out of our ability to avoid the impulse that's going on. Consequences are designed to educate, not to hurt. Your child does not have to feel bad to learn an educational lesson. Sometimes people think, try to think of all these punishments, because it, but it didn't bother him. But your goal is, if a child is out of control, and send him to his room, and he plays with his Legos, and he comes back, and is able to re-enter the family calmer, and able to take some act of repair, saying you're sorry, helping someone out, helping the little sister they hurt, then you've accomplished an educational goal, which is, you let them know that there are limits to what's acceptable in our family. You're not out of our family. You need to go and take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. It's easier to do it. It's also easier to get them to go. When you're sending them to Hades, because they, you know, they're just get out of here, and they feel you're kicking them out of their life, it's much harder to get them to go. Yeah.
Do you feel it's better to do timeouts versus punishments, or depends on
what you mean by punishments? You get a child. Depends on how old the child is. You know, take the other from a two-year-old, it bothers him for now, but in 10 minutes, he doesn't even remember. So there isn't any ongoing educational lesson. If the child is out of control, then taking something away doesn't necessarily fit. What you need to do is help him find a way. The reason to send a kid to time out, in my mind, is to help find a way, a method that works in your family with this particular child, that helps the child go to a protected setting which helps him or her, let's use to him, soothe himself. That you don't have to do the hard work of getting him to calm down, but that you know that he's safe where he is and that he can calm himself down. Because hopefully over time, most children, the time it takes them to calm down and soothe themselves will be shortened. Because they know that you're not, I mean, obviously there will be occasions when you didn't need you, but, so I think that if the child is somewhat out of control, or did something that really you want to give them the message that within our family we don't do that. Not they took an extra cookie. Unless it's a big deal in your family. But again, if they did something that you really want them to know, that's when timeout is used for. Otherwise, it depends on what the behavior is you're trying to teach, something that comes out of the situation itself. Is, you know, you throw food, then I'm going to feed you. I know you want to eat by yourself, but if you're going to throw food, then I'm going to feed you. If you don't want to eat, fine, don't eat, you'll eat later. So depending on what it is you're trying to teach them. But I wouldn't send a kid to time out because he's eating with his fingers. I would say, fine, if you, this is what it is, if you need me to feed you, I'll feed you. I don't know if that that's clear. Okay. Sherry, you have a question?
No, I was just saying before that
in fact, it's thank you for saying that. And if you haven't, well, it's such interesting work on communication. People say that most of the meaning of a statement you make comes from body language or tone. I try this with kids all the time. What's the difference between the same words, I love you, and I love you? Same exact words, but clearly they're very different meanings. And our kids can really learn from, you don't always have to speak to them, you have to negotiate. A good look is also an important thing. But if we pay attention to our body language and trying to be soothing, we have to try to be in a place where we're soothing. The other thing I think it's always important to do, if there are two of you in the household, anybody over here used to watch wrestling? You know, tag team parenting? If there's someone else there and you can't do it, just tag them. Let him get in the ring. It's not, you don't have to stay there the whole time. Yes, in the back. I think that depending on what the issue is, however, the older kids are, the more important, in my mind, it is that the consequence of this happens over time. And that certainly when they're older, but even when they're younger, the idea that I say the right thing, my child is going to change in front of me and do exactly what I want, is unrealistic. And I think we have to let that go. You want the TV off, and he wants to watch it. You don't say, you don't pull the plug, you don't turn it off, you don't wrestle them out of the room. You say, that's okay. You can watch this now. You have two more minutes, so I want you to just
turn it off right at this second. Oh, after 2 minutes, tomorrow when you get home from school, the TV's going to be in the closet. Or the cable car will be in the closet. Or whatever else. The consequence is over time. And then you have to do it. And once you give that consequence, you don't. There's no way of earning it back. Once kids earn back their consequences, then it's all a game. You're in the stock market. It's not. And I think it's really important for them to know it. Taking something away has to also be relevant to what it is they're doing. You ever have a 5-year-old and you happen to buy him an Xbox, and every time he uses the Xbox, he gets overstimulated and throws something. Then taking away the Xbox is not necessarily a punishment. It's an educational decision by parents saying, I don't want you to get overstimulated. I don't want you to lose your temper. It is not worth it. We're not little kids anymore. Speaking as a parent who had Nintendo many, many years ago for like 3 days. Mike couldn't handle it. And that was just the end of it. And he hated me for that. But you know what? He loves me now. So, and that's what you have to be able to get used to, is that there will be moments when your child will look at you with these withering looks and will be able to say something that's just going to stab you in the heart. And you'll be able to say, you know, my kid said, I hate you. Even me, they said, they hate me. Yeah, but I said, you're allowed to hate me. You still have to go to bed. Because your feelings are your feelings. It's not, I have no control over your feelings. But that's not prevail. That's not going to change the educational decision I'm making. I'm sorry you hate me. I hope someday you'll love me. I really do. I would say this. I hope you love me again someday. But now you have to go to bed. Ooh, you're the worst father. There's not much to say about that. Hopefully they will then change their mind at some point. Yeah, what do you think? We'll just go around. Yeah.
About teaching honesty, so
thank you. 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds are first discovering that, you know, until they're 5, they think you're like gods.
My 3-year-old lies.
He's so advanced. You must be so proud. You know what is lying in young children is the way that they're testing the power of adults to know and their own power. It's really important to help reinforce the notion that truth is important in your family. And if you know that they're lying, just don't get involved in an investigation, especially if you're an attorney and you're a prosecutor and you know how to do this stuff. Don't catch them. Just say, I think you're lying. It's not the truth. I think the truth is this. And we like to tell the truth. Because they're testing out the limits of your knowledge. And and that's important for them to do. It's also important for them, once you realize that they're testing out the limits of your power and your knowledge, and they're trying to make themselves more powerful, you still have to educate, but educate them calmly. But don't turn your child into an immoral 4-year-old or 5-year-old because he lied. Everybody lies, by the way. Everybody lies. I'm sorry, officer, I was only 57. Everybody lies. People try to lie less frequently, but... And integrity is important. I'm not saying everybody lies, therefore it's okay. But let's not make our children into people who are not moral. Okay, I'm sorry, but you've been raising your hand for like 25 minutes. We're going to stop in 5 minutes. Yeah.
I have a list of questions, mm-hmm. but I'll try to just one. So we both have assertive 4.5-year-old daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And she's 6. If she said anytime I want her to do something, it takes multiple asks. Eating breakfast, getting dressed, whatever the request is, but I have to say the number of times in order for it to happen, I think that's part of her asserting her independence.
Mm-hmm.
How can I change that?
There's also a script. The script is,
yes.
I ask you 17 times, then you finally do it. So the question is going to be, what opportunities do you have to begin to change that script by changing the routine in the morning, for example? That in a way it will motivate her to get up early and get dressed because it's something else that will be appealing to her that will only be available to her if she's, I don't mean TV, but some people do that. That will help change.
Suggesting bribery?
No. I'm not saying I'll buy you something, but I'm really suggesting it's time of mine. I'm really suggesting we'll do a project. If you consider that, see, I don't consider that bribery. I consider that
interactive time to do a productive activity. Or on Thursday or Friday mornings, let's choose what desserts we're making for Shabbat. That's been not saying right. Not TV and not money and not things. Things do not make people happy for more than a few minutes. They do things that can make people happy for a very short time, but they don't make people happy for a long time. I don't think it should be things. It should be time.
Let's take a couple more questions. 2 minutes and then I have to then really stop. I'm going to say something that you're not going to like to hear, which is, it's not reasonable to expect your child to change unless you change. We can't control our children. The best we can hope for is to create the conditions under which they control themselves, so that if the conditions your child is functioning in don't encourage self-control, then you do something different. I had a child like that. It was really hard to do it, but I got up 20 minutes earlier in the morning. It only took me 3 years to figure that out. Okay, but it meant he needed an extra. We realized that if we used our schedule, which we had figured out, and it was really good, it really worked for us, and it didn't work for him whatsoever. We needed to build in